We discussed last week Yiftach. Those of you who don't remember, we'll quickly remind you that Yiftach was the choice for leadership when they really had very few good choices. And Yiftach, even though he was great in many ways, he led us to great military victory, and he also was great in the way that he put his trust in Hashem. He did have his failings, undoubtedly, and a major one being where he managed to kill his only daughter, according to most opinions. We now continue with the story of Yiftach, and I'm sorry to say it's not going to get much better. Starting Perek Yud Beis, we're up to. So after Yiftach had led this great military victory, the people that were saved by him don't exactly show the proper hakaras hatov, shall we say, but rather they responded in a negative way. So remember, this battle is happening in Eber HaYarden, in the Eretz HaGilad, that's the Transjordan, and across the Jordan were the people of Ephraim. Anyone remember what Shevet Yiftach was from? What? Right, he is from Menasha. Very good. It's an open book, Pastor. You can look for the last part. But these are the people from Ephraim. So Yibay Vayitza Eik Ish Ephraim Vayavort Safona Vayomu Yiftach Madu Avarta Rehirachim Bivne Amon Veronoro Karasal Rechasimach Beischa Nisro for Rechaveish. Not exactly, thank you. He said, why didn't you call us to fight with you? You know, here you go, you take everything for yourself, we're going to burn down your house. So Yiftach, needless to say, does not take this well. Well, Vayomer Yiftach alehem, ish riv hayisi ani v'amir v'nei amod ma'od, v'azak eschem v'lo hoshatem osim yadom. He said, what is revisionist history? I, in fact, were in big trouble. I called you to help. You left me high and dry, and I had to fight this war myself. So I, because you weren't coming, had to go fight this battle myself. And now you're coming to complain about it? So what exactly were they complaining about? It's kind of an odd, you know, sorry we missed the war. So the Malbim, we'll start with there. Traditionally, he has a list of questions and answers. He says, "Vashelos, madu nikbatzu b'nei amonu machatolahem, uchuvas yiftach yeshba im v'kefel dvarim vayitzak ish Ephraim leEphraim chararo al shegilad bachur rosh ktsin rosh beis Yosef." He said, "You know what bothered him? What bothered Ephraim was the fact that Yiftach was from Menashe." And in fact, in general, when you have a disagreement, when you're dealing with the two sons of Yosef, which son of Yosef is supposed to be on top? When Parshas Parshas Vayechi, right? Ephraim, in fact, according to the brachas of Yaakov, was supposed to be in charge. So their claim, according to the Malbim, is what kind of business is Menashe is going against what Yaakov said?
So
he said, we don't agree. The people of Menashe didn't have the right to make you in charge of Beis Yosef. We are, in fact, in charge of Beis Yosef. So this is what they came complaining to him.
To burn his house down?
Burning down
with,
the house.
Him,
what?
Burn the house down on you.
Also, okay. Isn't this kind of old news? I mean, people have had, in terms of, you know, he's been leading the people and doing this, and now they're coming?
Well, how long has he been leading them?
A little while.
Is that an approximate or an exact number?
Yes.
Okay, that's what I thought. It's very interesting. I was showing Dr. Teitelbaum this excellent sefer I picked up on my trip to Israel last week. And the story behind the sefer is as good as the sefer itself. The story is there is this fellow who in the 1930s was living in Italy, and he wanted to make Aliyah. Legally, he was going to cross over, but the war broke up, and he ended up being sent to Siberia, where he remained until 1975. And while he was in Siberia, he was an engineer. He worked for the Russian railway system, and he raised a family, and he taught Tanakh, and eventually his daughters taught Tanakh. And since he was an engineer, he made charts, lots and lots of charts. He made, so again, whenever it says that this many people in this shevet, he would make a pie chart with each shevet in it. And whenever it has the chronology, he would make year charts. And he writes in and it's all handwritten, and he writes in the Sefer that he said, in fact, that this, I'm not here to teach anything. I'm just making it easier for you to understand. I'm just mapping out the picture. So ends up in 1975, he finally gets to move to Israel. When he moves to Israel, again, he works for the trains, right? This thing is working for the Israeli train system as an engineer. And in the early 80s, he convinces the Misrad HaBitachon, the Israeli Department of Defense, to publish his Sefer. Oddly enough, he said that, you know, it's very important that the boys in Tzahal appreciate Tanakh. This will make it easier for them. And they publish his Sefer on Chumash. He then comes out with a second edition, which includes Nach. And in the second edition, has a Haskama from Rav Avadia Yosef. Then the third edition has also a Haskama from Rav Mordechai Eliyahu and Rav Avram Shapira. And this guy who just remained. So in it, he does a very wonderful job, if you remember from last Perek, spelling out, if you remember, we mentioned in passing, whenever the Tanakh throws us a number, it's important. So Yiftach, last Perek, got up and he said, it's actually this week's Haftarah, he said, no, it's been 300 years since we had the Vatel of Amon. And he shows that if you count up the numbers up till Yiftach in Shoftim, you'll get 357 years. And therefore, there's a machlokas between Rashi and the Radak as to where are the overlaps. And Rashi and Radak agree everywhere except for the question of Gidon. Right? Was there a time of Shibud? Was there a time that they were in trouble prior to Gidon? Or did Gidon overlap with the whole story? And the question of whether they overlapped, if you're going to add 6 years someplace, it's got to come out someplace else. Everyone has to end up at 300. So it ends up the question of Yiftach was only the king for 6 years. So the question was, this battle, did it happen at the beginning of the 6 years or did it happen at the end of the 6 years? Right?
So, did I hear you correctly? You said it came to 357?
Yes.
So how do you get down
to six?
So again, they all agree on the other things. They all agree on the... Everybody agrees. I can show you...
There are other overlaps.
Right. But the question is, these last 6 years, that's again, the Radak and Rashi agree on all the other ones up until here.
So the battle was presumably at the beginning of the six-year period.
Well, again, if the battle happened after he called out to Amon and said, why are you bothering us? Right, what happened in last week's parak. So the question is, well, according to Rashi, that's the beginning of the six-year period. Right? According to the Radak, that's the end of the six-year period.
But that doesn't make sense because at the beginning of last week's parak,
he was approached.
He was approached specifically to do battle.
Correct. That's Rashi's understanding. Rashi's understanding is this is why he was hired, as opposed to the Radak. He was hired and it took some time until we got to this point.
But the 300-year figure need not be exact.
So that's fascinating that they assume that it is specifically exact. Now, it's interesting because the Ralbag, I was debating whether to bring this in, because I assume that most people don't like numbers as much as I do. But the Ralbag points out that there's another important number that's coming up in Malachim Aleph, for those of you named Bean who signed up for it in the Siyam Tanakh. It says that the Beis HaMikdash was built 480 years after they left Mitzrayim, which means there's how many years from Yiftach until the Beis HaMikdash? No, because it's 300 years after going into Israel. This is from Yetzias Mitzrayim, so it's 140, right? 140 is a tight number to get in because you're going to have to do besides the rest of the Shoftim, and we've got a bunch to go still, you're also going to have to do Eli, you're going to have to do Shmuel, you're going to have to do Shaul, you're going to have to do David, and you're going to have to do some Shlomo also. He didn't build the Beis HaMikdash on his opening day. It took a few years.
Yeah, but Eli only lives to 52.
Shmuel only lived to 52. Eli lived longer. Right, Eli, right.
Eli's an old man. Shmuel right. only lives to 52.
Correct.
Shaul's only king for 2 years.
Correct. David's...
And he overlaps with David's 40 years.
But David's right. David's 40 years. Right?
He's 44. 7 years and 37.
No, 7 and 33. Right, it's 33 and a half, really. When we get to Shmuel, we'll discuss what there's a half year that's missing someplace. But you're dealing with 140, and we've got a lot of Shoftim to go still.
Yeah.
So if you tell me it's 357, if you tell me that we're not taking it literally, so then I've only got 83 years to deal with, and that's really untenably tight. Right? So therefore, it's not just a matter of we're taking the number literally, which I agree with you. At first blush, I would have figured, okay, that only has one significant digit, as my wife would probably say.
It's a round number. It's,
what?
It's a round number.
Right, it's one significant digit. Right, Jenny?
187
is a... Right? What?
187 is a round number?
No.
No, 300.
300, okay.
Right. So I would also say it sounds, you know, a little too... But no... Rashi, all the Rishonim take it literally, and you partially have to, or else you're going to get caught on the other side. Right? When that 480 number is going to run into trouble. So again, I actually scanned in the chart and I added it to the last week's Mara Makoma sheet. So going forward, I'll have it there, but I can print it out if you'd like to see where he goes year by year. It's a very...
Does he do the charts for this?
Yes. Everything is a beautiful handwriting.
And the charts are in his book?
That's all what the book is charts.
It's just the charts.
Just charts. Right?
No text.
What?
No text.
It has text, but explaining the charts. Well, that's what it is. I mean, he quotes the psukim, etc.
What was this guy's background? Was he a strong learning background, or was he self-taught?
Yeah, I mean, you look at the guy, he looks like your barber in Israel. I'm not seriously.
He's up in Italy. Mm-hmm.
What was it? Right, something. Right. I'll bring it in. We'll do show and tell. Okay, good. All right. So here we are, back to where we are. Yiftach is approached now by a bunch of ungrateful members of the Shevet Ephraim. Vayikvots Yiftach es kol anshe gila vayilachim es Ephraim vayaku anshe gilod es Ephraim ki amru plite Ephraim atem gilod betoch Ephraim betoch Menashe. Eventually he said, that's it, we're just going to kill all you people who pulled this on us. So therefore, remember, right now we're in the Trans-Jordan, we're in the half of Menashe that is on the Avar Yarden. All these people from Ephraim came over, and they basically say, get out of our Shevet, and they start killing them. So what do they do? Now again, the Jordan is the mighty Jordan River. You can't just walk across the Jordan, but there are certain places which are ma'abarot, translated as fjords, right? Crossings. You'll be over there. Right, there are certain places where the river is not as deep, and therefore you can cut. Those are the only places to cross. So Menashe blocks off those places, figuring that you can't get across without seeing them first. Anybody who tries to cross and says, "Are you a member of Ephraim?" and they, of course, know the correct answer is no. So, but then there's a test. This is only a test. Vayom Rilo, Emor No Shiboles. They tested them, they wanted to test their accent. Anybody who failed the Shibolas test was killed, and in fact, Menashe managed to kill 42,000 people.
Wiped out most of the adult males.
Yeah, you'd imagine that's a pretty big number. So, killing 42,000 of your own people, even if they have chutzpah, that does seem to be a little bit of a problem. Let's take a look at the midrashim on this. We start for number two. Va'olav Omar Hakasim Gever Rush Va'okshek Davim Mata Sochev Ein Lechem. Pasuk from Mishlei Proverbs. Gever Rush. Who's the Gever Rush? Who's the poor person? Zeh Yifsach Shei Rush B'Torah. He was lacking. He was poor in his Torah knowledge. Gerufos Shal Shit Mahaya. He would go and he would take advantage of the poor. Because he did this, he got a punishment. What was the punishment? God stopped him from doing Hataras Nadarim and saving his daughter. Now, a few things we see from this. One is, it's clearly out of order. Which is not a problem. Again, it would make sense that he had a war, then he met up with these people, and then he went home. That's the assumption. But that is not the order that Tanakh puts it in. So the idea being that, obviously, even though we're not saying the people of Ephraim were right in the way they acted, killing 42,000 of them was, shall we say, over the top? Just a little. Next, Eliyahu Rabbah. Eliyahu Rabbah tries to defend Yiftach a little bit. Shema Toma Osem Arbi Mishnaim Elif Shnargu Bimei Yiftach Yilod Bimei Mar Nargu. So why exactly were these 42,000 people killed? The Medrash wants to know. Yiftach HaGiladi Nader Neder Shelo Kahogen. Yiftach took an improper neder, saying that I'm going to give as a carbon, the first thing that walks out my door, not appropriate. Upinchas ben Elazar omed omed, and Pinchas ben Elazar was still alive at this point. How old is he?
Very.
That is exactly correct. He's very old. Well, we know it's 300 years since they left Mitzrayim, right? And Pinchas was around years, so he's well into his fourth century. He's the problem with Social Security. Pinchas should have come to Yiftach and said, listen, I could fix this for you. Or Yiftach should have gone to Pinchas and said, maybe you could help me out here. No, it never happened. He said, I am this great person. I'm going to show up by this clown Yiftach. He said, I am the king of Israel. I'm going to go to anybody. Each of them was a little too full of themselves. When you get high on yourself, you end up killing yourself. This doesn't make anything better. Yiftach Gilani Nadar Davar Shloka Hogan Lalos is Pito Gabe Mizeach Niskapsu Alev Anshe Ephraim Lasos Imo Mariva Gadola. So now the people of Ephraim approach Yiftach to make trouble. Hailo Pimlos Ishomelhem Rahatiro Nidro Bosom Erov Lasos Mariva and Bosom Erov. So they should have said to them, listen, this guy, when he was in trouble, he needed to do Hataras Nadarim. You didn't come to help. Now you're going to start up with him? Now, interesting, what's the chronology here? They're coming at a point where it's too late to do Hataras Nadarim, which it seems to indicate that whatever happened with his daughter happened already. Right? So this is kind of a flip of the chronology, yes. He could have been Matur Neder. Could have gone and said that. He says, "Enkom la neder lo iso lo sham to lavar ora al yeshem mechila eschit re kapar kshem she."
Could you translate
that? What? No, anybody. Again, in general, right? What Hataras Nadarim is, you need what's called the Pesach and Acharata. A Pesach is there has to be some piece of information that I was unaware of, and Charata is I have to feel bad about it, right? Obviously, had he considered the possibility that it was his daughter, he would have never made the neder. And of course he felt bad about it. This is a slam dunk. This is the easiest neder to get out of.
Why do you need 10 o'clock?
So it could be that because he's a king, it's different. That a king only appears in a certain type of Beis Din because of the status that he has. So Pinchas could have stopped this also. He could have given the musr and said, what are you bothering the guy for? You should have been there when he needed your help.
So you're saying the Shoftim have a halachic status of Noah?
To a certain extent, yes. Yes. If you look at the Abarbanel, the Abarbanel says, I think, that there are three different ways that the Shofet is like a melech and three different ways that the Shofet's not like a melech. Look at the list there.
So then in that case, by threatening to burn down his house with him, it's like Marduk's Lamalchus, isn't it?
Well, again, we're not here to defend the people of Ephraim. But it's hard to imagine that each of the 42,000 people threatened to do that.
What were they all doing in Menashe?
Well, you know.
All 42,000 of them.
It's nice this time of year. Would you believe? So God turns around and says, God said, these people in Ephraim, this guy, he goes and he fights a war for you, and this is how you thank him? 42,000, you should be killed. Shemar vayomaro, Amar no shibolas vayomar shibolas. Zer roshan avodah zarah, adam shomar chaveh or shi'abol. It says that the word shibolas wasn't randomly chosen. It's interesting. There are mefarshim who say that he could have asked anywhere that begins with a shin. He could have said, say Shabbos. Right? Sabbath, right? There's no shortage of words that start with shin. Say shalom. Oh, yeah.
Japanese cannot pronounce an R.
What?
Japanese people cannot pronounce an R.
Right, again.
Interesting. They call me Mr. Fleed. Ephraim can't pronounce it.
Yeah.
Mr. Fleed. You want fried rice with that?
Yes.
Right.
But it's a weird word, and it's got two possible meanings. Why this word?
Right, so he's saying that the word shibolas is a word of, if you say with a samach, it's a type of avodah zara. V'hu lo yachol ledaber kein ve'yachzu v'yishchatu al ma'bros ha'yardein. V'mihar kol eila, so who is responsible for all this, the Medrash says? Amar lahorag osan ela Pinchas ben Elazar. This is all Pinchas' fault. Sh'ayah sipik b'yado limchos v'lo eino moche. He could have stopped, he could have given the musr and he didn't. He could have taken care of the nether and he didn't. It's not just Pinchas. As if I have the ability, if anyone has the ability, and to in fact stop somebody from sinning, and you don't stop them from sinning, you're responsible for the punishment that they end up getting. General statement. Okay. So there you have the story of Yiftach.
Wait a minute.
Doesn't that go to last night's chair? I know it's not the same thing, but in theory, last night we talked about being a Moser. So I would think in this type of situation, if you don't stop them with sinning, maybe that is a way of stopping someone by being a Moser.
There are different ways you can stop them. You can chain him to the door, and he's not going to go out and sin. Doesn't mean it's appropriate. Yes.
This shibboleth has two meanings from my commentary.
Yes.
Either one tells me about avodah zarah. So can you help me out? One meaning says ear of corn.
Yes.
And the other meaning is flood of the stream. They think it means that they were using.
I think the more common is ear of the corn.
And that means
not children of the corn.
Right. I get that. And
right.
Why is that avodah zarah?
It's not, again, it's not. That's what the word means. But again, if someone is used to saying the other way, the Medrash says that was the name of an avodah zarah.
I see.
Right? People did not, as far as I know, worship ears of corn.
Well, this commentary says the latter was more probable. The question is mine.
The earlier, I think, is more traditional.
Locality of corn.
Yeah.
The
okay. Could be. I mean, but either way, it was just a matter of could you pronounce the letter shin.
Got it.
Doesn't really matter, according to that, which what the word meant. All right, so that's the end of Yiftach. Zayin ve'yishpro Yiftach Yisrael sheish shanim v'yamas Yiftach ha'giladi v'yikah ve'erba arei ha'gilad. And with that, Yiftach rules for 6 years. He passes away. And where is he buried?
In the cities of Gilad.
What kind of business is that? So, if you want a simple understanding, you look at the Radak. He says, in one of the cities in Gilad. But that's not the traditional. If you look at the Medrash Tanchuma, number 4, it says, because Pinchas and Yiftach both sinned here, they both got punished. Between Pinchas and Yiftach, the daughter of Yiftach was lost. And they both were responsible for her death. Pinchas nistalka b'menu ruach hakodesh, because that Pinchas lost his prophecy. Yiftach nispazu atzmosav. And with that, Yiftach's limbs started falling off. Shenemar v'yikbar be'arei Gilad.
One piece at a time.
One piece at a time. Interesting, there is a very fascinating discussion. If we were doing medical ethics this year, we may very well discuss the question of the obligation to bury amputated limbs.
We've talked about that.
We spoke about blood. We never spoke about limbs, as far as I remember. What?
I think I asked about that once before.
Okay.
But good. We can talk about
so, that. In fact, the question is, we know that in the event, once a person dies, you have to bury the entirety of the person. But what about if you lose a limb, if you have an amputation, etc.? I remember there was a Rabbi Josh Hoffman, who donated many svarim to the Eidos Library, was a diabetic and unfortunately had to have one of his feet amputated. So after the amputation, went to visit him in the hospital. He was always a kibitzer, even now. So I said, "How you doing?" He said, "Well, I got one foot in the grave." So, look at that. Oh yeah. So the Yad HaMelech wants to know whether or not there is an obligation to bury a limb lost from a living person, and he quotes that this is the source. He says the fact that you see that he was losing limbs and they kept on burying them, you see that you do have to bury a limb that is removed from a living person.
But nispazru means that they were scattered. It doesn't mean that they fell off. The implication...
How else could they be scattered?
Well, there was a custom, if I'm not mistaken, that you would allow the flesh to decompose and then take the bones and rebury them. So this may be that after the flesh decomposed, they took his bones and scattered the bones. Okay, just as right. Atzmosav, it doesn't say...
Why would that be a punishment?
Evarav.
Why would that be a punishment?
Because you're supposed to gather the bones and bury them together.
But again, it sounds like it does sound like this is a heavenly punishment, not that the people decided to do something wrong. Right, so the standard understanding... So again,
as an aside, another question, if I may... If we say that Pinchas lost his Ruach HaKodesh, so he doesn't turn into Eliyahu?
Well, again, it might have made a comeback at that point.
Oh, he's got an answer.
It's how the administration changed.
Right.
But if you put stock in this Medrash and take it literally, that his limbs fell off and they were buried in the cities of Gilad,
mm-hmm.
Shouldn't all the parts of the body be buried in the same grave?
Not necessarily. Yeah. I don't think so.
Okay.
Right. See, from here, not.
Well.
Yeah, but usually when you do that, that's because you're angry with somebody, or you're, you know, when they told people limb to limb, and they bury, they send out the parts. I mean, we have that in Torah.
Well, again, I think. But not you don't pull them limb from while they're alive. After they die, you might not want them drawn and quartered and have their ashes.
And send a message to the different parts.
But again, we're going to get to Pigalagish Begiva. There'll be opportunities to send out body parts later in the book. But for now.
So, but we don't see this as an angry thing?
Again, well, God, it seems that God gave some sort of punishment, which led to that. If you look at. last week's parsha, it says that Yishlach Moshe Likra Ledosan Vavir Bnei Eliyahu Yomarona Ale. That in last week's parsha with the Korach situation, Moshe tried to make peace, and Rashi commented there. Mikan she'ein machzikim b'machok she'er Moshe machazer achem rashim b'davrei sholem. In general, you should try to stop an argument, right? Even though this was already escalating, Moshe Rabbeinu tried to talk them back out of it. This is based on a Gemara in Sanhedrin, which is a little related to this. That's what we said. Next, Amar Rav called Mas Machokas over Barav. If you do it, that's an Avera. It says, Lo Yekakar Chaldasar. Rav Ashi Omer, Roy Ritz Tara. Dixiv Hach B'yad Moshe, Dixiv Hossam, Vayim Hashem, O Od Havei Na, Yadcha B'chaykecha. What do you get from Machokas? You get leprosy. Right? Modern day leprosy is a disease by which limbs, I think, fall off. Right. So, just a note. Okay, and that's the end of Yiftach. Not, as we said, on the one hand, you know, he was deserving of respect. On the one hand, he was in certain ways a very great leader, but as the title indicates, in other ways, extremely flawed. Who's next? Vayishpot Achras as Yisrael Ivtsam Beis Lechem. Next came Ivtsam from Beis Lechem.
This is Boaz, no?
Yes. This is Boaz, yes. Vayira Shroshim Banim, Shroshim Banos, Shira Chachutza, Shroshim Banos, Hevi Ravano Menachutz, Vayishpot Yisrael Sheva Shanim. Ivtsam is in charge, he has 30 sons and 30 daughters, he's in charge for 7 years. Vayamos Ivtsam Vikavar Beis Lechem. So as Yossi correctly pointed out, if you look at number 9, the Gemara in Baba Basra, it tells him Rav Huna, Rav Ivtsan Ze Boaz. Ivtsan and Boaz, same person. My Kamash Malon, what's his potel? Ki idach to Rav Bar Rav Huna, Dam Rav Bar Huna, Rav May of Esther Mishtos, also Boaz Lebanov. Boaz made 120 parties for his kids. Shinamar Vahiro, Shoshim Banim, Shoshim Banos. Shoch Hachutza, Shoshim Banos, Hevi Ravanov, Minachutz, Vahishwa Shoch Sheva Shanim. So he had 30 sons and 30 daughters. For each one of them, Achas also Shte Mishtos. Achas Bebeis Aviv, Achas Bebeis Chamov. Every time he made a chasana, he had two parties. One in his father's house, one in his father in law's house. Ubachuran Rosimein Es Manoach. And that one time did he invite Manoach to the party. Amar kudna akara b'may parali. He said, his wife has no wife, has no children. You know, when will I ever get invited back to a party by him? Ta'anah v'chula mesa b'chayiv. Because of that, all 60 children died in his lifetime. Hayin my incha b'chayecha d'irad d'chisin shisin ramalech ichpo v'odu chad d'mishtar n'zariz. As it says, you can have 30 kids and it'll be worth nothing. Better to have one good one. In fact, he did have one good one afterwards.
Right.
It turned out pretty good.
One had to live.
Right.
So is this the same Boaz with Ruth?
This is exactly the same Boaz as Ruth. As you see in number 10. Right? It says, Vayhi bimei shvot ha-shoftim. Right? We know the story of Ruth happens during the time of the shoftim. When? Again, this is a 300-year period we're talking about here, over 300 years. So, what do we do? To which point? So, say, Rifnei Maroch Maroshol Shul Hadoros Misparsim Aidei Shoftim Vmei Ivtsan Haya Shamar Rabaseinu Ivtsan Zeboaz. Obviously, the story of Rus is happening at this point because Ivtsan and Boaz are the same person. It's interesting that Barbanel sees a certain connection between the story of Yiftach and the story of Ivtsan. He points out that he says, you know, life is sort of a circle, has its ups and downs. Poor Yiftach only had one child and never saw her get married. He had 30 sons and 30 daughters, managed to marry every one of them off.
They all died.
What? Well, until they all died. So,
wasn't there,
Is there any discussion about the possibility that Yitzchak was not Boaz and that he was from
yes.
Beit Lechem and Dan and not Beit Lechem?
There is a fair amount. The problem, the issue is that if Yitzchak and Boaz are the same person, you'll see that that in fact he's very, very old. Again, if you do the math as to who's
why
the descendant of him.
The same people?
What?
Why do we think they're the same people?
Because the Talmud said they are. That's an easy one.
Okay.
Right. But again, if you look at the end of Rus, we get the Seder Hadoros from Yehuda down to David, passing through Boaz. And we know there aren't that many generations that Yehuda gives birth to Nachshon, Nachshon gives birth to Peretz, right? Peretz gives...
Chetron.
Right. So again, Yehuda gives birth to Peretz. Peretz gives birth to Nachshon, to Aminadav to Nachshon, right? And then there's not so much to Boaz.
Nachshon.
Shalmon, maybe Shalmon. You have a Rus there.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's you know where to find it. So again, I'm guessing Yehuda is Peretz. Peretz is Nachshon is Aminadav.
Chetzron holid as Ram holid Aminadav holid Nachshon, Salmon holid as Boaz.
Right, so therefore Nachshon is the grandfather of Boaz. Right? Nachshon was already an adult, shall we say, when they left Mitzrayim.
Right.
If we are assuming that Boaz and Yitzchak are the same person, well, I know it's 306 years since they've crossed over, which means it's 346 years since they crossed the Yam Suf, right? So therefore, and this is his grandfather.
So someone lived a very long time.
At least one person lived a really, really long time. Right, so that's the problem here.
He was a contemporary of Kempas then.
They what?
Roughly the same age.
Correct. They used to play shuffleboards together. So, right, so that's the reason that there are people that argue on the Gemara is because the numbers become very hard to accept. On the other hand, how many generations do we have till David from here? Right? Right, we have Oved, Yishai, and David. So again, and we have it's interesting. Yishai is a tricky one. There are different opinions how old Yishai lived. Rashi, there's at least one Rashi that assumes that Yishai lived to be 400. So that would, of course, allow us to move Boaz way back. Right.
It would make sense in a way, because isn't there a Gemara that says that Yishai was one of the people who never sinned in his life?
Correct.
So it might explain his longevity.
On the other hand, the other people who never sinned didn't have this type of longevity. I wouldn't know that Binyamin lived that long. I don't know that Kilov lived that long.
Right.
Okay, next, Vayishbor Achrov es Yisrael, Elon Hazvuloni, Vayishbor Yisrael Eser Shonim. Next we have Elon Hazvuloni, 10 years. What can we tell you about him? Nothing. Vayomas Elon Hazvuloni, Vikav Vayalon, Erez Zvulun. Then Vayishbor Achrov es Yisrael, Avdon ben Hillel HaPir Asuni. Avdon, the son of Hillel. Very interesting. In honor of Rabbi Goldberg, we have number 12. The Beis Yosef discusses, not that this should ever be important, how to spell Hillel in a get, with a yud or without a yud. So I said, Hillel matzasi kasev the yesh lekasev mole biyud. I forgot the sefer shoftim ksiv avdon bein Hillel. Right. So you know the Hillel that we have here, and this I assume would be the first Hillel in the history. Right, as opposed to the later, more popular Hillel that makes it into the Gemara. Hamasaros kasev shem les chaser, mashe shem medina yesh liyos mole. So the Beis Yosef writes that the Hillel, despite the fact that there's no yud here, should be written with a yud. And the Beda Kabayis disagrees. Ve'ein devar of nirin ki da adarabba mishum raya the hacha pirusha les Hillel b'mikra ki imzev odiyashu chaser v'kol mishpatam. He said, no, in fact, we learned from here that if you have to write the word Hillel in a get, or I would imagine, for the same matter, in a ksuba, that there should not be a yud in it. So this is what Avdon. How long does Avdon make it for? Yudalid vayhiro arba'im banim u'shloshim b'nei banim. Rochvim al shivim ayarim ve'ishbo yisrael shmo ne'ashanim. He had 40 sons and 30 grandsons.
That's strange.
It's not a great return on the investment, right? And they all rode on donkeys. Vayamas avdan ben hilal ha-pirasoni ve'yikara be-pirason be'aretz afrayim v'har ha-maleki. Okay, and he passes on. Next parak, we begin a better known shofet, and we will pick up with that next week. Mm-hmm. All right.
Well, everything is good. Dead bones scattered all over. Divorce.